She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thank you so much for joining us today. This show is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies. I would always like to remind you their dedication to improving the environment through creative and innovative business practices is why Fairfax is the leader in the business of sustainability. I am so proud to have them as a sponsor and thank them for their support. Very excited to have with me in studio today our guest for this hour, Peggy Turk-Boyer, who is the executive director and co-founder of the Intercultural Center for the Study of Deserts and Oceans, SADO. Yes, Peggy?
That's correct.
Yes, and it's the way you say it. And trust me when I say that in doing my research, once again, I got very excited about a fascinating organization that's doing great work with global applications. So, Peggy, welcome, and thanks for taking the time to be here today.
Thank you, Gina. SADO is also known as the Centro Intercultural de Estudios de Desiertos y Océanos. As a binational organization, we're working equally on both sides of the border and actually are more active in our Mexican location, given that our work is focused on the Gulf of California.
I know. I thought it was a very interesting combo, deserts and the oceans. So we'll talk about that. And I actually told you that I'm familiar with some of the work that you do. So I'm going to do some announcements and then we will get on the show and make this all about you and the great work you're doing. Just remember, everybody, that Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 Radio and Castle Rock Radio networks, where my shows can be heard weekly. Please visit my website at mrsgreensworld.com/radio-show for weekly broadcast times and links to their website. They're doing great work partnering with us to spread the word about the importance of the work my guests are doing, and we are absolutely thrilled to be a part of their networks. In case you are not aware of it, we interview guests from around the country every Saturday live, usually at 12 noon Arizona time. You can hear it right here at mrsgreensworld.com. We always invite you to join us each week. And if you can't, you can listen. If you can't be by your computer, you can listen on your iPhone or Droid. Lots of people do, including myself when it's a pre-record. And all of the podcasts, if you cannot listen at noon on Saturdays, are on my website, usually within a day, so that you can go back and download the podcast. And I encourage you to connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram, because that way you'll know about these guests. And please remember, you can always send me questions at mrsgreensworld.com. Even if you have questions for upcoming guests, love to get those. Okay, we are 3 weeks into our Pin It to Win It contest on Pinterest for Earth Month. The grand prize winner will be selected on Monday, which is Earth Day. So if you have not yet participated, we would like you to. We want to know what on earth moves you. So we made it very simple. We pick 6 categories that we feel of are great importance and significance for the planet. And if you're a pinner, please check it out. And if you're not, maybe you want to look at the board and enter and repin. It's a really good message about what on the earth moves you. It makes you stop and think. And so far, I can tell you the number one issue for the responses we've got, and it's been overwhelmingly positive, is water. I thought that was interesting. I'm looking at Peggy. It's not a TV show, but I'm saying it's been very interesting to us because we did not expect that outcome. We had, you know, healthy food and clean energy, and water is trumping everything. So it's very interesting to know what people think. Okay, one more thing. Have you had your Picnic for the Earth Day yet? And that is a wonderful, fun thing that our friends at the Nature Conservancy have asked us to help promote. Picnic for the Earth. You can check it out at, do the HTTP thing, earthday.nature.org. And we absolutely love the Nature Conservancy. And a short shout out about one of our national sponsors, Ecobella. I invite you every week to think about and make a very informed, conscious choice, not only about what kind of products you're putting on your body, but about the kind of companies and the nonprofits and the organizations that you're supporting through your purchases. That's how we really vote, is how we support things financially. I like to find companies that I can research to a fare thee well, no question about their integrity, and then I get my products from them. So I don't have to keep checking in to make sure, are they good stewards of the planet, yada, yada. That's my partnership with Ecobella. I encourage you, for your sake and the sake of this great planet of ours, to check them out at their website, ecobella2c's.com. I would love to know what you think. I have gotten some great emails from listeners. Use the code Mrs. Green if you decide to order, and you receive 10% off your purchase. And I am, again, proud to have them as our sponsors. So let's get on with the show. Here we go. Let's reintroduce you, because that seems like I have to say a lot in the beginning, but I never get tired of saying all those wonderful things because of the partners we have. Peggy Turk-Boyer is the executive director and co-founder of the Intercultural Center for the Study of Desert and Oceans, SEDO, and I would love you to start by saying it again in Spanish, because that was music to my ears.
Centro Intercultural de Estudios de Desiertos y Océanos.
And I won't be saying that, because I think I have a really good accent, but that is really, it's wonderful to look at the international partnership, which is basically it is between the United States and Mexico. It's always great to start by saying, what is it? Tell us about the organization. It impresses me that you're a co-founder. It was in 1980, and you're still around to share more good news about this great program.
Well, SEDO is an intercultural organization, again, recognizing that the natural resources of the Sonoran Desert extend into Mexico, and the Gulf of California is part of that ecosystem. And so it takes both of our cultures working together. Both of our cultures use the Gulf of California. Both of us depend upon the Gulf of California. Markets on both sides of the borders are driving that use. And it takes both of our cultures working together to protect the Gulf of California. So that is why SEDO exists as an intercultural organization. Our study is focused on the ocean, the Gulf of California, and the surrounding desert. The coastal ecosystems are important, and watersheds flow into the Gulf of California, so it's an integrated ecosystem, and so it's important to study both, but definitely our focus is ocean. And we work with local resource users. We work with visitors to the region. Our vision is that all those that visit or live in the region of the Gulf of California should be aware of the Gulf of California and should participate actively in promoting and sustainable use of the resources.
Well, it's interesting to me, and I kind of, among my friends, make a joke, when I wake up, I want everybody else to, about an issue. So like if I get ignited, it's like, well, did you know this? Did you know this? What fascinated me in doing the research is that it's a topical conversation now, because the oceans are overfished, ecosystems are being devastated. I don't want to be, Debbie Downer, but there are a lot of conversations going on globally about the shape our oceans are in, pollution, plastics, overfishing. What moved you to have the vision over 33 years ago to say, this is really important, folks, we better sit down? Later in the show, I'd like to go over some of your core philosophies, which have obviously held you in good stead. But what was going on for you, and I don't know who the other founders were, to say, folks, this is a really big region. There's a lot of people that get fed from this. There's ecotourism, which they didn't call it back then. They just called it tourism. What was part of your happening for you, Peggy, that got you started?
Well, I have to say that 30-plus years ago, 1980 is when...
So it's 33 years.
33 years ago, the conversation was not about conservation.
Okay, great.
It was just beginning around the world. People were beginning to understand that we're over exploiting resources, and that it was important that we start addressing conservation issues. But in the Gulf of California, we were still celebrating the sea that was teeming with life. It was one of the last great frontiers on the planet. And we were documenting that and studying it and sharing that. Fishermen were still enjoying the abundance of the shrimp fisheries in the 80s. The Colorado River was flowing. The Hoover Dam had been filled, so there was additional water coming from the Colorado River, and so shrimp was abundant. So we were not addressing those issues. It wasn't until the end of that decade that we began to understand that the first species that we identified, not Sato per se, but our predecessors at the University of Arizona, Dr. John Hendrickson, Christine Flanagan, studied the totoaba, which is a giant croaker that spawns in the Colorado River Delta. And the species was the first to be listed as an endangered species of all marine fish. And it was there in the northern Gulf of California that they were being caught during their spawning. And the population was threatened to the point of extinction. So that began to, and it was in 1975 that species was declared endangered. So in the 80s, we started to learn about another species that's only found in the upper Gulf of California, although the extent of the restricted range was not completely understood at the time. A porpoise, a small porpoise, the world's smallest porpoise, known as vaquita, which is only found in the northern Gulf of California, and it's probably the most endangered marine mammal in the world today. And again, it's only...
Of which there are many and growing.
Right.
And sadly.
Sadly. So that became a focal point for trying to protect the resources of this, the ecoregion that Sato is located in. Our primary offices are in Puerto Peñasco, Sonora, in Mexico, although we work in all the communities of the Northern Gulf ecosystem, which is north of the Midriff Islands and bordered by the Colorado River Delta in the northern end, at its upper end. So it's a rich ecosystem, diversity of habitats, and known as spawning habitat for many species. The endemic, meaning restricted in its range, vaquita porpoise and the totoaba were both considered threatened. Fishing activities, which had little management at the time. This was a very isolated part of Mexico in the 80s and 90s, very separated from the central government. And fishing was the mainstay of the economy in these communities. So fishing was a way of life. And these totoaba was a targeted species, a commercial species. But not only fishing, changes in the Colorado River habitat, and probably it's being caught in trawl nets from other fisheries as bycatch, as a juvenile, are all things that contributed to its demise. There's some indication that the species is coming back now, but the vaquita is a its fate is very much tied into the fishing activities. It's caught accidentally in fishermen's nets, nets that are being set, gill nets that are being set for shrimp. And that's where we come in, because one of the major markets for shrimp is the U.S. Consumer. And so the vaquita is threatened with all the shrimp nets, all the nets that are out there fishing. So in 1993, the Mexican government, Sato, participated very heavily with the Mexican government to establish this Biosphere Reserve, which is a type of national park in Mexico, the Upper Gulf of California and Colorado River Delta, an area known because for its importance for spawning for many commercial species, shrimp, blue crab, mackerel, Gulf corvina, which is a Totoaba relative. So it's very important for commercial species, for these endemic species, the vaquita, the Totoaba, birds, migratory birds from...
So it's actually like what would be a national preserve in our country.
Yeah.
So it's a protected area. And I'm sure, I don't like to use the word policed, but it would have to be monitored. From the Mexican government partnership, you know, to me, there's a triple bottom line in most of what I see in the world of sustainability. It was, I could see easily, in their best interest to preserve the species because there's tourism and there's the reliance on the commercial aspect of it for revenue to feed families and keep, you know, keep that whole thing going. What did you do to get their attention, Peggy? Because that's a big move and it's a big thing to for them to step up to, any country.
Well, it was not just SATO. I mean, there were a number of organizations that came
working together
to bring the attention to the Upper Gulf Biosphere Reserve. As early as 1955, the region was recognized as an important spawning habitat.
Oh, that's really going back.
Yeah, that's really going back. So it was known as an area that was important for spawning. It was it's a river mouth, and a lot of species use river mouths for spawning. So But documenting it and putting together. And one key thing that SATO did that made the Mexican government realize that it was a socially acceptable option was we brought together the industrial trawlers that were the shrimp fishermen, the prominent shrimp fishermen back in the 90s, small-scale fishermen, fishermen that used pangas, also fished for shrimp, but the prominent fishery was this industrial scale, and we brought those fishermen together. In the 90s, the shrimp fisheries were suffering a major decline. The Colorado River was being shut off and major decline in the fisheries and in the shrimp fishery, so they were open to the possibility of creating a reserve that would help manage resources, because again, this is a very isolated part of Mexico, and very little management had taken place up to this point, and so they were open to that and open to the opportunities it might bring. Because the concept of biosphere reserves is a United Nations designation, actually, and it's been adopted by the Mexican government as part of its national park system. So these biosphere reserves are places on the earth that have special importance and places where we are committing to learning how to use resources in a sustainable way. So they're not national parks where you can't touch it. These are places, there's a core area, the north of Golfo de Santa Clara, where there is no fishing by decree. But a large part of the area actually can be used by fishermen and others. And these are places where we're supposed to focus our energy in doing research and learning how to use resources in a sustainable way.
And really managing it instead of depleting it. And I think I mentioned to you off the air, I recently interviewed Jennifer Dianto-Kemmerly, who's the director of Seafood Watch at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. And it was so encouraging to me, because sometimes you do the research and it's daunting. And sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I can go to places where there's no hope. But what she said is the international attention, because people really love their fish, and the consumer is the United States. I mean, the biggest purchasers of seafood in the world are Walmart, and I forget the name of the other company, actually. And they are on board with Seafood Watch, and it's just what you're describing. And when I saw the research for this show, I'm like, these guys had it going on a long time ago. And thank goodness for organizations like Seafood Watch at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, because they're raising it to a global level as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're working with a group of people in the Gulf of California and with the Sea Watch people to define the criteria, because it's one thing creating market incentives and encouraging consumers to buy sustainable seafood. But the other part of the equation is you have to create sustainable activities.
The other end of it
to assure that you've got some sustainable products out there. So a group of us that are working in the Gulf of California are working with the Walton Family Foundation to identify what these criteria would be for fisheries in the Gulf of California, so that we're all on the same page in terms of what we're promoting as sustainable. There are a lot of different certification schemes for designating fisheries products as sustainable, but some of those criteria are very, very difficult to achieve, especially in fisheries where you don't know very much about them. So this group is decided to adopt, in general, the Seafood Watch criteria. But in addition, we're looking at that we're defining a whole new set of social indicators to indicate that these are the level of social responsibility of fisheries in the Gulf of California.
What I love to observe is that people ask me for my opinion, and I look at them a lot now, and I just say, you know what? It's complicated. Okay, we're going to have to take a short break. Time is flying, because we are not only having fun, we're getting a lot to think about. My guest in studio today is Peggy Turk-Boyer, who is the executive director and co-founder of the Intercultural Center for the Study of Design and Oceans, SADO. And again, trust me when I say you are going to want to stay here with me, because we have lots more to share. I'd like to know some of the people that are doing this with you, and what are the fishermen saying? Please stay here with me.
University of Arizona professor John Pollard asked the students in the Posada San Pedro Hall to consider bringing solar energy to the dorm. Just 3 years later, the Solar Cats, a group of students who took up the cause, have installed 44 solar panels on the dorm, saving 20,000 kilowatt hours of energy and reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 14 metric tons every year. Talk about students with a sunny future. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives?
Well, it's true.
It's true.
Well, it's true.
Goodwill.
Goodwill gave my son a chance.
My mom, hope.
My brother, a sense of purpose.
And help my dad find a job.
Goodwill helps thousands of people.
People like us every year.
People like us.
Every year. Your donations to Goodwill do change lives. Please donate today.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And isn't that a great concept? We are certainly giving you a lot to think about today. Global implications for the importance of the health of our oceans. And I am thrilled to have with me in studio today Peggy Turk-Boyer, who is the founder, co-founder of the Center for the Study of Deserts and Oceans, and that's SADO. I hope people will listen over and over again. So welcome back. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Don't forget to connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram, because then you get to stay connected about announcements for guests like this. So Peggy, when you have something happen like the Gulf oil spill, the focus and the spotlight gets put on how many people in the ripple effect base their economic stability on fishing and getting fish from the ocean because people love their seafood. If you take that away, livelihoods are lost, families are destroyed, homes are lost. In this endeavor, which is such an incredible area, almost a biosphere in and of itself, how do you get the fishermen's cooperation? How complex and challenging is that? It's their living.
The fishermen, in my experience in the 30-plus years that SADO has been working in the Northern Gulf, fishermen are looking. They don't object to good management.
How wonderful.
They know that their resources need to be managed, and they have always asked for more management. Now, when push comes to shove and management comes down the pipeline, they're not necessarily happy about it.
Right.
But they do understand the need to have a managed system. The government in the Upper Gulf, in the context of the Upper Gulf Reserve, the government, it's been slow to unfold different management, and it's been complicated because scientists are telling us that the only way to save the world's most endangered porpoise, the vaquita, is to eliminate gill nets, which are the best, the most efficient gear for catching shrimp and the most important fisheries. All the communities of the Northern Gulf of California ecosystem and the Upper Gulf Reserve depend upon fisheries as their mainstay. Puerto Peñasco is a little bit more diverse. They have a lot more tourism going on.
Right.
But so fishermen are being the government is on a program to eliminate gill nets. They have established a new vaquita refuge where they're no longer allowed to fish, so they're being excluded spatially from certain areas. They have about 30% of them were bought out through a program, a voluntary buyout program that switched their gear or gave them alternative economic activities. And now the government has said within the next 3 years they're going to prohibit the use of gill nets.
What is the replacement for a gill net?
Well, the studies have been conducted over the last World Wildlife Fund and the Mexican government, INAPESCA, have been conducting studies to try to determine a replacement.
Okay, we can't use this, but what can we use?
Yeah, and the best they've come up with is a light trawl that is actually pulled by a small boat as opposed to the large trawls. The light trawl has lighter nets, and it's actually hovers slightly above the bottom, and so the bycatch rate of other species, it does not catch the vaquita porpoise, and unlike the gill nets, and its bycatch rate is much reduced from what the large trawlers pull in. So that's what's being proposed as the alternative. But fishermen are also being asked to, now the project that SADO's really involved in right now is an environmental impact study. So fishermen have been told that they have to work on an environmental impact study to identify all the ecological impacts of their fisheries on biodiversity, such as vaquita, the totoaba, sea turtles, etc., but also on their fisheries. And so they have hired SADO, and they're funding it with some help from the government and some help from other foundations. They're funding an onboard observation program so that we can document their activities. Where they're fishing, what bycatch is being caught, a logbook program. We've got a major education program that's getting fishermen involved in taking data on their own fisheries. So this gives them immediate feedback as to what the impact that they're having in a particular place.
So they're really good partners.
So
they are stepping up and saying, I see my future is very short if I don't get on board with making this work.
They're good partners, but they're major challenges. They're not at all interested in giving up their gill nets. I mean, there are a few, but for a large part, this is the, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they were fishing with trawls from their small boats. And then they switched to gill nets, and now they're being asked to go back to something when they figured out another technique that was more efficient.
Probably a much better return on investment. I mean, you got to. They're not looking at the collateral damage, but I mean, you understand from their perspective.
Yes, you
even
do.
Though you want to have the global feel and the global implications.
And they're willing to work with us to try to find these alternatives, They're challenged, in paying for this because the burden is on them. They have to prove their compliance. We're taking data on their participation in all the programs that we're developing for them. They have to prove their compliance and show that they're participating. So it's a changing dynamic, but it's pretty exciting. One of the things that another real key component to getting fishermen's buy-in for us is to get the whole community behind them. And one of the ways that we do that at Sado is by getting kids involved.
Okay, it's one of my favorite subjects, and I love the things you're doing with youth. So talk about that a little bit, because engagement is everything, and I get excited about the future when I talk to kids.
Well, we did an intense program with all the schools in the region for about 5 years, but the program that's been most impactful is our environmental contest. And just to give you an example, last year, every year the theme is different depending upon what the dominant environmental issue is.
What's the hot topic?
So last year it was the contest was focused on fishing for the future. So we gave talks on sustainable fisheries to 5,000 kids in the region. And introduced the rules of the contest. The kids from elementary school to high school to a few colleges that are in the region that were interested, we had over 500 participants, signed up to do research on a particular fishery. They did that by interviewing fishermen, learning about the fishery, learning about the problems of the fishery, and they proposed solutions for reducing the impacts of that fishery by improved management or finding markets or the comprehension of the students was amazing just by looking at the solutions that they were proposing.
Applied learning. I mean, this is real. This is not sitting in a classroom and memorizing meaningless numbers. It's applied learning. Did the teachers get excited about it?
The teachers got excited about it. The parents of these kids, over 50% of the parents of these kids are fishermen.
So it was a really good hot topic.
So it was a very good hot topic, and fishermen cared at a different level because their kids were involved in helping them design a sustainable future. So the winners of the contest all came to a ceremony at Sado with fisheries authorities were the judges, and fishermen leaders were judges, and we had dances, and it was a celebratory event. The winners participated in a camp at Sado, a summer camp, and where they visited the protected areas in the region. And we worked with them to figure out how to implement the projects that they had proposed. So one group of kids, for example, and from Desemboque, decided they wanted to have a meeting with fishermen. So they convened a meeting with fishermen.
What age group were they?
These were like 10-year-olds.
Okay. Oh my gosh. It's so exciting. Okay.
They're getting fishermen together and saying, we need to do this, this, and this. And they agreed on certain things and are following through with the fishermen in their community. So this is how change is going to happen in the future. These young kids have a whole different perspective. Fishermen have a different perspective. They're seeing things through the eyes of their sons and daughters.
And everybody who has a child cares about that. I mean, that's how you get the heartstrings to make the economic decisions that are saying, okay, this is my child that's asking me. So that's really exciting. Let me ask, it's kind of a little sidebar, but I think it's a great topic to just be authentic about. There is so much bad press about going to Mexico. And part of the like, I thought I read about one of your camps that you have in the summer for kids to go to, which I'm sure is open to any children from around the world at your eco camps.
Well, they're very similar to the camp that I was just describing that we did for these kids.
For these kids.
Contest winners.
So has that been a barrier? Are people from outside of that area? Because you don't read negative things about the area that you're involved in, from what I can see. I mean, it's border areas, there are drug wars, but talk about the safety of people who might be listening and saying, you know, I love my child to go there. How safe will they be?
I think there is, I mean, certainly there has been some violence. In the first years that I was in Puerto Peñasco, you never heard of a murder. That's changed. That's changed all over the world.
Truly.
But it's not a focus of violence. There's drug trafficking going on.
Everywhere.
That's everywhere. Everywhere.
Right.
I think this is just an area where people come to the beach and the local community is living their lives fishing. And I think it's safe. I mean, I've been there. I don't experience danger myself. I've been going there for 30 years. Certainly, you have to be aware of what's going on around you. But we had last summer. I mean, the people that are comfortable traveling in other countries don't have any qualms about going to Mexico. I think the people that are a little more nervous are perhaps people that don't speak Spanish and maybe have never been there before. But the people that have been there and have homes there are coming there regularly and it's no problem.
And they don't think twice about it.
No. And last summer. We actually had our biggest wet feet ocean camp ever. We had 16 campers who had a great time.
That's what it's called, wet feet?
Wet feet ocean camp.
Love
because
it.
It's in the field. They're exploring tide pools. We're talking about kids 10 to 14 years old. This summer's camp is scheduled for June 20th to 24th. It's 5 days and 4 nights, exploring tide pools, learning about conservation issues such as vaquita, learning about the oceans. There's an optional trip to San Jorge Island where you can snorkel with sea lions and visit the local estuaries, which estuaries and coastal conservation, those are important issues too, where development emerges along coastlines that threatens important habitats such as wetlands. And so Sato's had a strong program in that direction as well.
And there is nothing more, like, it's one of my most wonderful memories as a parent, us visiting areas, my husband and my one daughter in particular, they had tide pool fever. I mean, they would be lost. I would end up with my, you know, ADD getting in a chair and just watching them. But it is so wonderful on so many levels now more than ever to get kids out in nature, to get them out of TV watching, away from their electronic devices. So to me, the value of it for guests that I have on the show that are doing anything with kids, get back out in nature. And I think it changes kids forever. My kids have it. They have it because we do it.
Right. No, it changes kids' lives, visiting the ocean, touching a sea star.
I want to go.
A sea cucumber. There's nothing like it, really.
It makes it real. It makes it so real. What about in my world, and like I said, when I wake up, I want everybody to wake up. I write about it a lot starting now and through the summer about the concept of ecotourism. I mean, there are such global possibilities. Is that one of the areas that you are focusing on where people can come that are really caring about the environment and stay at one of the facilities? I mean, are you open for ecotourism?
Oh, yeah. Sato's been doing ecotourism for the last 30 years, basically. And in recent years, we've been trying to train some of the local communities, people that live in the local estuaries, to share what they have in terms of oyster farming or fisheries with the general public that want to learn how people live off of coastal environments, how people live off the ocean. And that's part of the picture that we need to understand, not only the biology, the fascinating biology of a fiddler crab, but also how do coastal communities survive and what are their challenges to trying to do things in more sustainable ways. Those stories are best told by the local people. So Sato has created this ecotourism brand called Nature Art. And we envision it to be something that local community groups are part of, and marketing it as a corridor, the Northern Gulf of California as a corridor. The whole program has slowed down in recent years because tourism has both because of economics and as well as this fear of going to Mexico. Tourism has been down, but the signs are showing people are beginning to build confidence and interested in traveling to Mexico, and it's irresistible, like you said.
It is. That area is pristine, and it is unique. So there are so many things that they can go and see only there, and I have not been there to the area that I went. It was probably over 20 years ago, but I will never forget walking down in the estuaries and the tide pools and so forth. So it just cracks me up when I get the 2-minute warning. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more, which we didn't get to in this segment, but who's working with you? Like, do you have scientists? Do you have kids from the universities around the country? Do you have people that you hire there in terms of actual doing the work and the research? And then you have some upcoming events that sound fun and exciting that I would like to help you promote. And then lastly, let's get around to how you're funded. I know part of it now comes from the fishermen themselves, but anyway, this has been a fascinating interview. There's more fascinating information to come. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And my last little comment before we go to the break is follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and all of those wonderful social media things. And the reason I say that is because we send shout outs about people like you and get it in the social media stream so more people will come into your programs. Please stay here with me. Mrs. Green's World. We'll be right back.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. The 2013 VW Jetta TDI is the sedan people love to love. It comes with a zippy turbocharged diesel engine that's 90% cleaner burning than previous diesel engines, and it goes farther on a tank of gas than a Toyota Prius. Chapman Volkswagen has a great selection of Jetta TDIs, so choose yours today at chapmantucson.com or in person at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson.
At the University of Arizona, we're putting solar know-how to work. And it's not just our researchers. Our students are on the job as well. Our student solar racing team, using recycled solar cells from NASA, designed and built a car from scratch that gets the equivalent of over 3,000 miles per gallon. Talk about students who will go far. Really, really far. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
You can save hundreds on home improvement by checking out Habitat for Humanity's Habastore. The Habastore sells new and gently used home improvement items for pennies on the dollar. You can find cabinets, doors, windows, light fixtures, furniture, and much more. Plus, our inventory is constantly changing. You'll be saving money, and all the profits go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson, helping to build a better community. The Habastore is located at 935 West Grant Road. You can reach us at 520-889-7200 or habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are certainly giving you a lot to think about today because of this content-rich guest. Peggy Turk-Boyer is the executive director and co-founder of the Intercultural Center for the Study of Deserts and Oceans, a very intriguing combination. We're all one planet. I say that on the air a lot. It's an integrated system. Don't think it's not. So what you're doing in Colorado is going to affect someone in the Gulf of California. So let's talk a little bit about how you're staffed, because we didn't talk about that at all. And most of your program is in Mexico. It's a partnership with the United States and Mexico. How are you staffed?
Well, our staff here in the U.S. is small. I'm located here in the U.S. now for 20 years. I lived in Puerto Peñasco, Sonora. And I have an office assistant, communications assistant, who's helping promote what SATO does here.
Who is wonderful, by the way. Let's give her a little shout-out on the air.
Yeah, okay, Sherry Steele.
She reached out to us and talk about top-notch prepared. Kudos.
Okay, Sherry. And on the Mexican side, we have a full staff. We have a administrative staff and three major areas that we work. One is coastal conservation, and we have a team that's engaging with the local landowners, trying to promote alternative economies. We had workshops that we did with these communities last year that taught them how to do arts and crafts with recycled materials that you may someday see in the stores here in Tucson.
Right.
Teaching them how to do ecotourism, monitoring of bird and fish populations.
Which is a huge industry.
That's right.
Birders.
And now we're starting to move into climate change issues, trying to define the indicators. These are areas that are quite vulnerable and communities that are quite vulnerable to sea level rise and other changes that might come with climate changes. So we have a fisheries team that's working in the corridor, a biological corridor south of Peñasco, and we're getting those fishermen to monitor their fisheries and trying to establish spatial management. We also have a fisheries team that's working within the Upper Gulf Reserve on this environmental impact study. One of our workers is actually in La Paz. Then we also have an education team. The education team focuses on programs with youth, but now we're really involved in an intense program with fishermen. So those are our teams. We also have a staff person, an intern, that's in charge of our public programs. So we talked about the ecotourism opportunities that we're creating for local communities. SATO also offers tours as part of that ecotourism initiative. And you can sign up for one of these ecotours. Just look on SATO's website, www.satointercultural.org.
And I think we just say that, make sure we say it at the end, too. And of course, there's links all over my website that'll tell people how to get there, because I don't think everybody knows about it. I was very happy when your outreach person did the outreach because I said, oh, I know who they are. This is great. I'd love to have them on the show. Uh-huh. So it's, yeah, that's wonderful.
So Sado is in the northern, the very northern part of the Gulf, and there are a few other organizations that work in the area, and we collaborate. We work with the National Commission of Protected Areas. We're working in the context of a biosphere reserve. We work with fisheries authorities, the CONAPESCA and INAPESCA, the fisheries research arm. So we're very involved in trying to integrate our what we're learning. We're doing research to learn about the resources involving local communities and trying to turn this into policy and effective management, and working with government authorities is key to doing that. And like you said yourself a minute ago, it takes all of us. It's not. It takes government. It takes local people. It takes researchers. It takes organizations like Sado all working together to make to create the change and to create sustainable livelihoods. Which is basically what we're doing.
Even at the University of Arizona, I see a much more aggressive, in a very good way, or proactive to integrate, to make things more interdisciplinary, because it's so easy at universities to put silos up. And, you know, here's the water people, and here's the energy people, and then there's biosphere two over here. But I see at the university a lot of hope with the starting of the Institute of the Environment and the work that Jonathan Overpeck and Diana Liverman are doing. And Diana Liverman, who is world-renowned in certain circles, says we've got to have an integrated approach. Interdisciplinary is the way to go, because we're getting it. It's like, your work is important, but if you share what you're doing, maybe it'll have implications for the important work and the implications for the planet that I see. It's wonderful to see the progress.
So the University of Arizona is one of our major collaborators as well. One of our board members on the U.S. side is with the Institute for the Environment, Rafe Sagarin.
You're kidding. So Rafe is like, you know, learning from the octopus. He was one of my favorite all-time guests. He's given us gifts of his book for our Pin to Win contest. You know, people say, what are you doing Pinterest? Well, any way that we can raise awareness about the global issues, yeah, I'll pin to win. You know, if you're doing Pinterest, you shouldn't be just doing reuse, recycle. You should be learning about some of these global issues. And like I said, the response. But Rafe, did you see my face light up? We love Rafe at Mrs. Green's World. Uh-huh. So that's wonderful to hear that. And he'll be happy. I'll shoot him an email and let him know.
Yeah, Rafe and Kevin Bonine and Ellen McMahon, all professors. Ellen is at the art department, and she has helped bring in the whole many artists and worked on numerous projects because our image and the image of nature outside of the natural environment needs to be beautiful, just as the natural environment is. And she's done wonderful things for us in that respect. And we actually have an upcoming event.
God bless you. Peggy asked me, what should I do if I cough on the air? And I said, this show is about human beings. So if you have to cough, you have to cough. And we'll just, if you want to take a glass of water, please feel free to do that. You okay?
Yeah, I think I'll make it.
I think you're going to make it. We hope so, because there's a couple minutes left in the show. We want you to make it through that.
So one of our upcoming events is this, with the University of Arizona, has a group called the Next Generation of Sonoran Desert Researchers, which are young people that are learning about the natural environment and conservation issues. We are partnering with this group to share information about the Sonoran Desert and the Gulf of California. And
another
we invite the
fragile
public.
Ecosystem. The Sonoran Desert is unique. So it's like we're talking about this is, there's just one of us. And so it's exciting to hear that too.
So we want to get more researchers to come to visit Sado. We have a field station and places to stay while researchers conduct their research. So it's a perfect place to learn about some of these interdisciplinary programs that we have going on. So from 3 to 5 p.m. on April 29th, there's going to be a special forum between Sato and this next generation of
and
research scientists.
And where is it going to be?
Well, we're still pinning down the location, but and you can look for the location on Sato's website. You can write to us at info@satointercultural.org or just look on our website.
And get the information to one of your favorite now social media.
All right.
Our team is all about getting the word out about important programs like this. And like I said, and Rafe, let's go back to Rafe for a minute. The entire genesis of his book came from tide pools. He talked about tide pools. I mean, he was like, we were just like hanging on his every word about just realizing of connecting the dots and the magic that was there. So that's April 29th. You'll let us know where it is. And I have to ask you a question before the time runs out. In my world and with my guests, I have seen just in 5 short years the importance and the power of the appropriate use of social media. Are you being pulled in that direction? Are your younger students helping you? Because to me, you meet kids where they are, and they're on Twitter, and they're on Instagram. So is that are you building that into the mix yet?
We're definitely into Facebook. We have not made the leap to Twitter. We know we need to. We need to revamp our website and move in completely in that direction because
it's changing so fast. I mean, because, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah,
it is.
And like Rafe's analogy of the octopus, you know, you have to having your fingers, your arms in many
true.
Different places is going to create a healthier system, and we can take advantage of the resources of all of us. Sato is very well positioned to work in 2 cultures. Our approach is very holistic. It's very complicated and difficult to manage at times, and funding is always an issue. We're fortunate enough to have a number of foundations that support us, the David and Lucille Packard Foundation, the Walton Family Foundation.
Wonderful.
Luthold Foundation. And we have some fishermen. We're providing services for fishermen. So they're beginning to contribute, which is really important because it's their resources and they need to be part of it. The government, we get government funding, and we sell T-shirts.
And, you know, it's the diversification of our changing economy as well. It's not business as usual anywhere that I can see. It's in a large part why Mrs. Green's World has been successful, because it's like the old ways of doing, getting the word out, like buying a newspaper ad, they don't work anymore.
No.
So being part of that. That being said, there is such an inappropriate use of Facebook. People have Facebook fatigue. So you're the importance of your work. You've always got to be looking for ways to get it out so it is sustainable and the important work continues. It's great to hear that you have the core foundation support to me. It's you know, a big deal to have that. Okay, so the event on the 29th, can people actually make donations, charitable, tax-deductible donations? It's a 501c3, I assume, or is it not?
It is a 501c3 okay. in the U.S., and it has tax-deductible status in Mexico as well. So people are more than welcome. We do campaigns and specifically ask for support. We have many needs. Revamping our communication system is one very important need, so we can keep people up to date with all the diverse things that we're doing and different ways that they can participate.
One of the things I'd like to end with, if we could, it's like begin with the end in mind, and you did. And I want to make the analogy of I had this aha moment truly when I was doing the research for the show about, I always talk about our founding fathers, that they knew what the world might look like in 2013. So some of the core tenets of things like the Declaration of Independence, these people knew what they were doing. So you have a core philosophy when you started the organization, and I don't know who else started it with you, about what the organization would be and what kind of the underpinnings would be throughout its activities. So could you share that with us? Because I think they're really worth sharing, not only because they're such great values, but because they are still holding you in good stead 33 years later.
Yes. Information, knowledge is power. The more people know, the more they care, and the more they care, the more they will act to protect nature. So we started, our beginnings were in education. We were sharing what we knew. I was a marine biologist. My husband is co-founder. We shared what
we
were
passion.
Learning.
Okay, yes. Okay.
With everybody.
Not surprised.
Collaboration and cooperation.
Partnerships.
We not only shared information with people, we asked them to participate. We asked them to collaborate with us because we knew it's going to take all of us to achieve sustainable resource use. And youth, the future.
Love it. I want to ring the bell when I saw that. It's like, yes, involve the young people. They are our future.
They are our future. And so we have created a generation in the Northern Gulf of California that is not the same. And their view on things is influenced by a much wider vision.
Well, if you're listening and it's not touching your heart, I'm questioning how that could not be. And I just thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. Next week, are you ready for this? Our guest will be Haley Thomas. She's a 12-year-old girl who is literally helping to change the way kids eat all over the world. She's almost not to be believed. Tell us again about your website and where we can find out activities, even on April 20th.
Our website is sadointercultural.org. You can find a wealth of information there.
And they can always contact us. Thanks for being a part of our world. Make it a great green week. Peggy, thanks so much for being here and for what you do.
Thank you, Gina.